Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk radio show sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. I am here with the producer and also co-host of the show, Pamela Lockridge from Louisiana. We also
Hello,
both service ambassadors. Yes, sorry. Go on.
Pam
was saying hello to everybody. So we also serve as ambassadors and on the board for NASCA, and we're both very, very privileged and proud to be able to do so. So this evening is special guest night. Our special guest, her name is Teresa Fontaine, and she's from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And before I tell you a little bit more about Teresa, Pamela and I wish to share with you a little bit about NASCA and NASCA's mission. So NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect. And we do so with two goals. The first is educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. We encourage you right now to call in and be a member of our panel. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that number is area code 646-595-2118. And what better time than to get involved with NASCA then this month of April. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we wear a royal blue ribbon to acknowledge awareness, increased awareness to this very, very important issue. So one more time, if you wish, if you're streaming, listening in, we encourage you to call in. We'll take care of you, and I know our special guests would appreciate having you call in and asking her questions or having a comment. So that number, again, is 646-595-2118. Before I tell you a little bit more about Teresa, I'd like to tell you a little bit about how the show is structured on special guest night. It's a 90-minute show, which goes by very, very quickly. And we like to divide it into three segments on special guest night because someone is telling their story. And so the first segment, we like to have our guests, and we like to listen and learn about the childhood years, years from earliest memory till about 15, 16 years old. We then break to the panel, and our panel members have an opportunity to ask a question or may have a comment related to our special guest and their story. And the second segment would be in the later teenage, earlier 20s and 30s years, chronologically. We'll break again to the panel. And then we will, the last segment is in the present time and what our guest is doing today. So the show is broken down into three segments. Usually the panel has two opportunities to interact with the special guest, and we do ask that everybody who does join the panel, please keep your questions and comments around our special guest and her story. This is her night and her show. So without further ado, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Teresa. So Teresa, as I mentioned, is from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and she is the youngest of 10 children. She states that her parents are residential school survivors. They grew up in church-run schools, unhealthy relationships are and were the norm in their in the community, so abuse was always there. Teresa states that she was sexually abused by a close family member around the age of 5. So I'm going to stop right there, and there's so much more information that Teresa gave us in terms of her bio, and we will read more of that as the show goes on and we go to the other segments. But without further ado, I am going to unmute Teresa's microphone and just welcome Teresa, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us this evening. And again, my name is Penelope. I believe you spoke with Pamela, our producer, when she talked to you about coming on the show. So welcome.
Hi there. Thank you for inviting me to your show. And I'm really excited to be on here and to share my story. And hopefully somebody could there's just so much that I want to say, but I'm just happy that I'm able to come on and share my story and talk with all of you. Thank you for inviting me, Pamela.
Oh, you are absolutely welcome, and we not only thank you, but we all know we're all adult survivors of child abuse, and many of us, myself and Pamela included, have come on the show as special guests and told our story, and it is a great opportunity to share and to offer hope and healing. But I do acknowledge, and I know Pamela does as well, it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage every time we tell our story. We're giving, it's a gift we give, we're giving a piece of ourselves. And so we are very, I always feel very humbled when I meet a new special guest and I hear their story. So we also thank you. I think so we're reciprocating the gratitude. And so I wanted to know, Teresa, if you could just maybe, because of those not only on the panel, but also a lot of people listen in, or the shows are archived and they listen and later, they go and play them later. A lot of people come that are, you know, that are starting on the cusp of their healing journey, listen to the stories, it gives them hope. So we'd like to structure them in the same somewhat format so there's some consistency in the content. So if you wouldn't mind starting with your earliest memory in your childhood years, maybe your earliest memory of what it was like growing up in your home, give us a little bit of a picture of what your family life was like, very, very, very young. And if you're comfortable,
yes, okay.
Your earliest memory of abuse. So
I shared with you in my the info email I sent you, I talked about growing up with parents who were in residential school. So in Canada, I'm from a reservation. So on the reservation, the government came in and took our parents and put them away in residential schools, which were run by priests and nuns. So my parents lived in the residential schools for 13 years of their lives, and they experienced all kinds of abuse, you know, from sexual, emotional, physical, mental, spiritual. So when my parents left the schools, they came together and they got married and they had 10 children. And when they came into this marriage, this union, they had no idea what parenting was. they were struggling with their trauma. So my mom was really emotionally distant. It was a lot, like, as far as I could remember, I experienced emotional abuse. I was never heard in the family, so I was kind of just pushed aside. And then there was other kinds of abuses, mental, you know, the spiritual, the sexual abuse happened by a close family member. I think I must have been about 5 years old. And for the longest time, I buried that away really deep inside. And it didn't come back to me till I was in my early 20s. But I'll get to that later. But so when I was a young child, I experienced that in the home. I also sexual abuse outside of the home, at school. There was the older kids. They would take us to the back, you know, and they would touch our private parts. And we just thought it was normal, right, growing up in our community. That stuff was just normalized. Everything was normalized because that's what our parents grew up with in the residential schools. They experienced all those different kinds of abuses. So it was just kind of normalized in our community. And so for the longest time, I kept everything buried deep inside me and developed a lot of anxiety and panic. But I never knew what that was. So way later on in my life. But just dealing with the sexual abuse was devastating to me. And I just thought, you know, okay, other kids are dealing with this too. So it just must be a normal thing. You know, it must just happen. It just must happen to us. You know, it's okay, I thought. And later on, I started to blame myself. You know, that it was, you know, I must be doing something wrong, or I must be doing something to promote, to deserve this, is how I guess, lived with it, normalized it, tried to make everything okay in my head, because that's where I spent a lot of time, was in my head. But so that was the earliest memories of the abuse, you know, and it just went on, I guess, just growing up into a home where our parents were abused themselves. So everything was just normalized. I keep saying that word normalized because that's what it was, eh? And
well,
we never knew anything.
I'm agreeing with you. You're right. It's like when you grow up and it's what you know, you think that's normal, or you think that that's just not normal. You don't mm-hmm. know how to question it in a different context. I think there's a lot of people listening in and on the panel that are probably shaking their heads going, yep, oh yeah. So may I ask you a question? I didn't mean to interrupt, but you said you're one of 10 children. So were these all your biological siblings, and where were you in the birth order?
Yes, the first child my mother had out of, she had before she met my father. And then the 9 children that came after are with my dad. And I'm the youngest of the 10. So I was kind of left in the dark, right? Or I was always picked on and from the older siblings. So there was that kind of abuse too.
So do you,
so I'm the youngest of the 10.
So you're the youngest of the 10. Well, I guess they stopped when they got a perfect, right?
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry, and you know, and we do laugh sometimes on the show. We know these are very, very serious subjects, but we also that we do include some laughter just because I think it's good medicine. A little bit of it here and there. But Michael, I'm glad. So you're the youngest of 10. And do you believe that this cycle of abuse, and you had obviously already stated that, your parents were born in abusive homes, and this was something, that they were dealing with their own issues with the abuse. Were your siblings subjected to that abuse as well? And we don't expect you to speak for them, but just to get more of an idea of what was going on in the home generally.
Yeah, abuse was happening all over our community, eh? So there was a lot of sexual abuse. There was a lot of emotional, a lot of lateral violence, right? So I believe my siblings, a few of them shared stories with me, and a few of them were sexually abused by their peers and from older people in the community also. So yes, it occurred with, all of them probably experienced it. Like
so,
I said, it's just it's a normal thing.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask Pamela if she had any comments or questions as well before we continue.
Hello, Teresa.
Hi,
I'm so happy that I'm so happy that you could make the show. I'm not happy about the subject, but, the more we talk about it, the more we're going to win, right, over this stuff.
Yes.
I mean, we need to stop it. Yes. So hearing your story and about your brothers and sisters and about a lot of the community, was this talked about openly? I mean, or did people try to keep it a secret and hush-hush? I mean, you said it was going on so much. I don't understand how people couldn't talk about it like it was an everyday occurrence, this is
no
big deal. I was sick with these last night,
Yeah. No, it was held. It was secretive, right? It was secretive. So nobody shared. Like I said before, I buried it right deep down, and I never acknowledged it till I was in my 20s. So it took me
that's pretty early. Yeah, that's pretty early. Did you start healing in your 20s? That's further on in the show, but if you started acknowledging, then that's starting on the healing path.
Kind of started healing, yes, you could say when I was 28.
Wow. I didn't start on my healing path till my 50s. I'm 63 now.
Wow.
Good. Right. I'm good now. I'm recovered. I'm absolutely wonderful. And I try to reach out to people and have them come on the show so that they can start their healing journey earlier than I did, right? I don't want people to wait to hold this stuff in and have all kinds of physical and mental issues all the way up into their 50s because of it. I had some bad, I was in a mental institution three times before I started getting help. And I tell people, if you don't start getting help early, you're going to end up in the hospital. You're going
yes.
to. Because we can't hold it in. It can't be held in forever. It just can't.
No, it's a scary ride.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm sorry that you started being abused by the age of 5. Who abused you at 5?
Was it a close family member.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And so you said everybody thought it was the norm just to go around being abused.
We didn't talk about it. We just kept it to ourselves. It was we were taught how to keep secrets.
Right. Was there physical abuse as well?
A lot of physical abuse in school. The lateral violence, bullying from our peers, teachers. So there was that at school.
And you said it was a church-run school. So were there nuns or something? What kind of school was this?
Okay, my parents were in the residential school, so they were taught by the priests and the nuns, and they were sexually, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all those abuses, they experienced it. And then when my siblings and I were born, we were in day schools. So they were just getting out of that system, right? Mm-hmm. Our local government was taking back the education. So when I was in grade 2, I believe, that's when our community got back local control of our schools. So we hired indigenous people to teach the students. So it started changing.
And who are your indigenous people? Are you Native American?
Yes, I am Ojibwe.
Okay.
Yes. Ojibwe.
How do you spell that?
O-J-I-B-W-E.
Okay. Were there any other Native Americans around there? Like any other indigenous? Go ahead.
There were the Cree people also, but not too many in our area. Like we're in the southern part of our province. So it's mostly Ojibwe.
Okay. Okay, so I'm gonna let some other panelists talk. So Penelope, back to you. Thank you so much, Teresa.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you, Teresa, and thank you for also, setting some context around. I had read in your bio, right, that you were of the indigenous, background of your family, and so thank you for sharing that with our listeners, with our panel, because it does give a little bit more context. So we have a panel that is called to support you this evening. We have Jessica from North Carolina, and we have Darlene from Tennessee and Annie from California. So I'm going to bring them on in that order, and I'm going to bring on Jessica North.
Hi, everyone. Can you guys hear me?
Hi.
Just making sure because I'm in my car, so I do apologize. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. And we overcome by our testimony. And it's unfortunate that a lot of us have experienced this, but it's so great to have NASCA because you're with people who can identify and relate, and you're not alone. And the more that, I know for me with my healing journey is my abuser and so forth, it's like they stole my voice away. And it took me, quite a few years of healing to get my voice back. And the more that I speak and I talk about and share my story, it gives other people hope. And it also makes it easier for other people to come out and share what they've been through. To share, their stories of, if they've been abused and so forth, and to have that identification because we do heal. And, I grew up in a family as well that we kept secrets, and we always had that pink elephant in the room that nobody wanted to talk about. And then when the holidays came, we wanted to sit there, everybody wanted to sit there and have like one big happy family, but we're not the rest of the year. So, I'm very sorry that you experienced that. And also, one thing that bothers me as someone who's a Christian is I hear so much the way that, a lot of times this happens within, it's spiritual abuse. It's a form of control. And people use God, religion to abuse. So I'm glad that, you're here and you're speaking out and you're sharing. I don't like to hear that it was normalized. And, it's not until we grow up a lot of times that we realize that that our families of origin were very toxic and unhealthy. And the more that we grow and we get better, we can see, this is not normal. I know that I distance myself now from my own family a little bit because they are toxic and unhealthy. And it's better for me in my recovery journey to keep my boundaries there. So thank you so much, Teresa. You're the baby. You said 10 kids, the baby. So you know, we're survivors. So
we are.
Survive that.
We are. I like to think of myself
as
a survivor.
Yes, a survivor, exactly. I don't like to use the word victim. I have an organization. It's called Survivors Outreach Ministries, and we don't use the word victim because that keeps you in a victim mindset. We use the word survivors because we have survived, and we don't just survive. We start to thrive. So,
that's right.
Glad
that's right.
Here. Exactly. And, you know, welcome to the NASCA family, and we look forward to hearing from you more and sharing, because there's people who need to hear, you know, your story so they know that they're not alone, and to be able to get some hope and some healing as well. We help heal each other when we share our stories.
I agree.
This is my first time calling public
and sharing my story.
I share my story a lot when I'm working with my clients, and that's as far as I go.
Hello, this is Pamela. Teresa, are you on speaker?
Can you repeat that, please?
Oh, Teresa, are you on speaker?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't hear the feedback now, so
I
don't know what happened.
I just wanted to thank Jessica for calling in as a panel, and boy, do I remember her show, which was not too long ago. And I can tell you from her show, she does understand, and just like she had just so eloquently stated, and she's doing some really great work. And how awesome to call in! Thank you, Jessica. By the way, I'm going to put you back on mute. And to support Teresa, you know, it's Teresa's first, you know, when your first time coming on, it's a huge, I think, step in, you know, just letting the world know, right, to share your voice. The reach is very broad, but you're in such a safe place, Teresa, to do that.
Yes, I was so afraid when I called in. I was really afraid. I was having anxiety and like, oh my gosh, right? I'm going to share my story. But I'm feeling okay, and I'm really happy that I'm able to share my story with you. And hopefully it will help other people come forward.
I guarantee you it already has. It already has. And you are not alone. When the first time I did my first show, I call it shaking in my boots. But I think if it was easy, right? It's growth is, you can feel growth, right?
That's right.
So I'm going to
I was just
on
telling
Annie
my son. Okay, go ahead.
Go on. I'm sorry. No, go on. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to share with you that I was telling my son yesterday, you know, son, we have to do stuff that we're afraid of so we can overcome that. Courageous. We have to. Just do it, even if we're so afraid. Let's just do it.
That's such great
thinking
great,
about our show
advice.
Today.
Oh, I think that's such great mom advice. And you don't talk the talk. You're exactly, you're walking the walk, because here you are tonight on the show.
Yes. Yes.
You're a good mom. You're a good mom.
Thank you.
I'm number one, Annie. Oh, yeah. No, it's a parent. I'm number one, Annie from California. And Annie,
Hi. Hello. Hi, everybody. Hello to my NASCA family.
Hello.
Annie.
Hi, Annie.
Are you there? Oh, okay.
We are here.
Hi, Teresa, for telling your story. I wanted to say that my middle name is Therese, and so I can relate to you a little bit because of
okay.
that. And okay. I wanted to say that I didn't get my voice back until I was like in my late 40s. And then just little by little, I could listen to other people talk about it. Then I could talk about it myself a little bit. Then I could write about it a little bit. And it took a lot of little steps to get to the point that I can talk about it openly now and not feel any shame whatsoever. A little bit of fear, but no shame.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you. So, believe it or not, and we had Darlene from Tennessee. She's one of our NASCA ambassadors as well. When she calls into the show, sometimes she drops off and comes back on because of just where she is, if she's on the road. So sometimes panelists come on and then they drop off. Don't take it personally, as sometimes it has something to do with cell phone connection, nothing else. So, but she's a very dedicated mm-hmm. NASCA ambassador. She actually does one of our group recovery meetings, which I'm not sure if you're aware of or not, Teresa, but NASCA, besides the Stop Child Abuse Now show, does three group recovery meeting Zoom sessions a week for all NASCA
wow.
family members. It's on Zoom. Yes, so they're group recovery, which is, I think they're great. And they are Tuesdays and Thursdays and Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As an aside, and that information can be found on the NASCA website, which, as you know, is www.nasca.org. That you can, without further ado, and this is crazy how this happens, but the 90 minutes seems like a long time initially. It goes by super quick. So we're already past the first half an hour. We're
okay.
We're at 57 minutes. So I'm going to turn the microphone and the time back to you as the end of the second segment, and really just to take it from, you know, your childhood and start talking about maybe your teenage years or your college years, or just have us follow your story from childhood to, you know, adulthood, if you're comfortable with that.
Oh. Yeah, no, I could share. So when I started, I guess when I was about 12, I started getting into drugs and alcohol as a way of coping. Somebody offered it to me, offered me alcohol, so I tried it, and it made me feel good. I was able to come out of my shell. I started smoking cannabis products, and I enjoyed that. It helped me cope, and it helped me with my anxiety. I never knew what anxiety was at the time, but it helped. So I used those as my coping mechanisms. And, you know, being in that kind of crowd, you know, with people who drank, smoked drugs. I went to a party one night and I was raped. So that was another thing added on to my abuses. And so with that, I was numb. I felt like I was just frozen, in a frozen state. And I stayed like that for many, many years. It just like I was an empty shell. And I just didn't feel like I was alive. But I was just going through the motions. You know, I left home. After that happened, I left home. I never told anybody what happened. I just left home, moved to the big city, was couch surfing, you know, for I think 2 years. And then I finally moved back to my community. And I finished school, and then I left home again, and I met my husband and had a relationship with him. I mean, we started our relationship, and we got married, and we had our first child when I was 25. So when I had my child, I started, I guess you could say I went into a depression, postpartum depression. Everything just hit me, and I went into a depression, and I started having panic attacks, and I was wondering, you know, oh my God, what is happening with me? I never knew the effects, you know, the post-traumatic stress. I never knew I was living with that. And it took me, I guess, into my 30s before I realized, you know, this is something from trauma. You know, I'm living with this, and it's just part of the trauma. I'm okay. You know, I used to think I was crazy, and I had all these crazy thoughts, you know, always living in my head. And that was just some of the effects from the abuse. After my child was born, I never wanted to leave her with anyone because I didn't trust anyone. So that was a big thing too. And it just started coming to surface, you know, oh my God, you know, I'm feeling really like all this stuff is coming back to me. I kept having a recurring dream when I was a child, I think till I was about 12. I guess after I got into the drugs and alcohol, that dream just kind of went away. But I guess the dream was just a message for me that, you know, something happened and it was buried deep, deep inside and I didn't want to look at it. But after I had my daughter, that's when it started coming to surface again. And I was able to, I was fortunate enough to meet some really good helpers. And I was able to, the first thing I talked about when I met these helpers was my rape. I talked about being raped and how I lived with that. And they started teaching me, you know, this is post-traumatic stress. You know, you've been traumatized. So I started learning a lot, and then I started reading a lot. And then I started trying to reach out to people, you know, to get more information about this post-traumatic stress because it was so new to me. I had never heard of it before, right? So I started educating myself, and I started finding people that could help me. And I'd listen to them share their story. And I wouldn't share my story. I would just listen, and I would take it all in, and I would say, okay, I'm okay. I'm okay. It's okay, I am normal. I'm not going crazy, or I'm not crazy. Right? So that's when the journey really started, is when I met those two helpers and they started sharing with me about the post-traumatic stress, and I was able to go into group sessions and private individual sessions. And then after I had my second child at the age of 30, I started working at a woman's shelter, and I started hearing more stories. And then I'd go sit with the I guess you could say the therapist, in-house therapist. I would go sit with her, and she would tell me what she would be doing with her group of survivors, and I would just listen, and I would do those things when I'd come home. I would practice, you know, I'd start journaling and you know, looking out there for books to help me and to help on my journey. So that was a big step after my son was born. And then I started kind of moving away from the addictions. I was able to cope healthier. I had healthier coping skills. So that was, I guess after my two children were born, that was a really big eye-opener for me. You know, I don't want my children to go through what I went through. I want the cycles to stop now. I want to live a healthy life. My children deserve to live a healthy life. We don't have to live like that. So that was, they saved me. My children saved me from all of that.
Oh, my God. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
That is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. But you also describe mm-hmm. me as someone who just, you know, you just... You held it all in, but you also just wanted healing, and you wanted, you know, to be on the other side of it so badly that you, you know, you found that you had that drive, and you found that inner parent within yourself, right? You knew you had to heal that
yes.
inner child, but you kind of, I just see by you accepting the help of the helpers initially, and then when you got the job in the shelter, just like a sponge, right? Like absorbing that, and you were like self-coaching. You take it and then you implement it because you just you had that drive, and I think that's incredible. And you touched
and
upon
my children.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You touched upon some things, though, that I want to go back to, if that's okay, real quickly, because these are things that, you know, our experiences may be different, but a lot of times the feelings are very, very similar, and the coping mechanisms are similar. So you brought up some things I wonder to touch on, if that's okay.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, you used some verbiage around it, but there are two things that struck me. First was numbing, right? Going to the alcohol and the drugs, right? It's so common in almost every story and in my own as well. We find things to numb the pain, you know, in terms of either addictions, compulsiveness, drugs, alcohol. Mine was perfectionism, right? And sugar. And then the other thing is, you know, you said that, you know, you became almost numb inside yourself. And a lot of times, you know, when we're in abusive situations, I'm sure this term has been used, but dissociation, right? We disconnect from ourselves. And so I just wanted to touch upon those two things, which you're speaking to an audience, people that can totally relate to that, right? Our experiences may be different, but the feelings and a lot of times the coping is very, very similar. So just that you disconnect from your body, and then, you know, as Pamela mentioned, you know, your body keeps the score, right? That's also the title of a book that you may or not have heard of, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. But, you know, we may take ourselves out of it and become numb, but our body doesn't forget. And these things become heavy. And as Pamela mentioned, a lot of people end up in the hospital, right, from the heaviness because the body carries it. And so you talked about that, the numbing and also, the numbing with drugs, but also just the disconnection and how you really had this drive to reconnect, to find a way to reconnect and have some healthier coping skills and patterns of behavior. So, but I just wanted to touch upon those two things because you're talking to the right group of people who can totally relate.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to interrupt you, and because you did say something else very, you know, very profound, and that it was your children, you know, that the postpartum depression from your first brought your awareness, right? But also just to address the patterns of abuse, not that you were an abusive parent, but that you just did not want to pass on this heaviness to your children. You wanted to break that cycle. And that's, I think, the greatest gift a mother can give, person can give, not only to themselves, but to their family and to their children.
I was saying that they saved my life. It was, I guess, when my son was two, that's when I really sat. I was in a crisis unit. I went into a crisis unit because I had a mental breakdown after, I guess, dealing with more postpartum depression after he was born. And then doctor putting me on Paxil, antidepressant, and that just made me feel like I wasn't even, it just made me feel like I was not real. I don't know if I can describe it that way, but it just felt like I was living outside my body. It was a really strange feeling, you know, when I was on those antidepressants. Like it just wasn't me. It was like I was just a robot, may as well say. And then being in that crisis unit, I just thought, you know, I gotta stop. You know, I gotta stop taking this stuff. I gotta do this, you know, and do it in a healthier way. You know, I need to talk to people. I need to. So
that, along with working in the woman's shelter, really helped me on my journey. Those two things, you know. So being in the woman's shelter and, you know, like you said, I was a sponge, yes. You know, I'm just absorbing everything and just reaching out and trying to find these ways to heal. You know, I even turned, like I said, I had helpers. I even turned to, I got in touch with my spirituality. Growing up, I was never taught, you know, our ways as a people. I was never taught about our sweat lodges, our ceremonies. I was never taught any of that because it was looked down on, right? So it was part of that spiritual abuse. But I was able to connect that way, too, with our medicines, you know, my plants. And I used all that to help me get healthier and to help me break those cycles, to help me learn how to cry, you know, and just to let go and just be alive and to, you know, just use everything that was there for me. But I never knew that I could use it. But it was there, you know, our medicines, the plants, as I speak about. I got into smudging. I would use our sage, our sweetgrass, and I would use that. I would pray, go into a sweat lodge, you know, and sit with others and pray in there and listen to them sing. So all that was there, but I never knew that it would help me. But it did. And then just finding other ways too, right? So there was so much, but all those things saved me. And it was right there. It's all free. Right? It was right there in front of me, and I never knew. So it was just connecting with those right people at the right time, and I was very fortunate. You know, I used to be so stubborn, and I would just dismiss everything growing up, because I guess that's where my that's where I was living in my frozen state, where nothing really... I never saw anything that would help me, but this helped me. So I'm grateful that I had those helpers along the way. And now I could say I'm a helper because I help people now in my new role. So my new role now, I work with soul, and I teach my clients, you know, about healthy relationships. The people, our traditional history, and I teach them, you know, about the healthy cycles. Let's break these cycles, these negative cycles. We don't have to raise our children like this. You know, they didn't ask to be brought into this world. Let's, you know, they're our gifts. Let's treat them right. Give them a good life so they don't have to go through what we went through. And it wasn't nice. It wasn't fun, right? We try to make it fun. We used humor and everything, but still, deep inside, we were hurting. We were crying out, right? But we didn't show our emotions growing up. We had to stuff it down. Now I'm learning to cry, and I know it's okay to cry. So I'm trying to teach my kids that. I have two grandchildren now, so now I'm really, you know, breaking the cycles. I'm, you know, cutting away from this codependent relationship that I've been in all my life, you know, with my siblings, with my partner. So I'm healing, you know, that abuse still plays its role, but I'm getting better every day, right? And I'm able to deal with it in a healthier way, healthier coping. You know, now I do yoga. I do positive affirmations. I use essential oils. I walk. So I'm incorporating all those healthy stuff into my life to help me. Because I still think about it, right? I'll get triggered. I get triggered a lot.
and I'm learning to deal with my triggers. You know, I have to stop myself and say, okay, I have to breathe, just breathe through this. You know, it's just a little reminder, it's okay, you're safe. And I do a lot of inner child healing, so I talk to my inner child a lot. And I sit with her a lot and just talk with her and ask her what she needs, because she is the one who is hurting, and she tries to take over my adult life, and she tries to take over and be in control of things, because that's how she is. You know, she loved to control because she lost control when she was a child. So that's her thing. And sometimes I see myself, I am OCD at times, you know, everything just has to be so in my house. It has to be so, everything has a home. So that's just some of the effects too of that abuse. So much there.
Oh, I can relate to so much of it. Of course. I can relate to so much of everything that you just said, and you just put it so, everything so beautifully. You're so articulate. You really are. And by the
way,
I'm certified. You're welcome. It's true. The thing that I just said about you is very, very true. I'm a certified yoga instructor, by the way, and I'm trauma-informed trained. So I, when you say, oh, yoga helped me, I get a smile on my face. I think, yeah, that was the body work, right? Incorporating and really be able to feel your body, right? Because your body comes alive when you start going and doing the work. You know, you've numbed yourself, and it's a great way to connect. And you've obviously found a lot of really great ways to connect the mind and body and spirit. But your healing journey sounds really incredible. And you've used a lot of different modalities that really helped you. And just by you stating all those, for those people who are listening in, streaming in, and maybe even some of those on our panel, I know for me, all those modalities help. It helps to have people just to witness and observe and hear about other healing, you know, methods and modalities that people have used in their healing process. It's really good information. So I thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure that
You're
Pamela
welcome.
Has a couple. truly, thank
yeah.
you. I'm like thinking about the sage and the herbs. That kind of struck me. I have to do some reading on that. That was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's part of our culture.
Yeah, but I'm sure Pamela has some questions and comments. So I will turn it over to her.
Okay.
Thank you, Penelope. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
One of my questions is, when you sit with that little girl, the inner you, what does she look like?
She looks really sad. You know, she always has a sad face. And she's just by herself with her head down, her legs crossed, and she's sitting there. Just feels alone.
Well, does she, you think she feels like you aren't accepting her in some kind of fashion, that you're not ready to?
Yes.
Okay,
she does.
Well, that's what happened with me. I was disgusted with my inner child because I saw her as dirty. I saw her as putrid. I saw her as disgusting. I didn't want to sit with her. I didn't want her near me. But when I started on my healing journey, and I started healing, and I went through grieving of the loss of my sexual innocence and my innocence, childhood, once I started on that healing journey, then I was able to go back and rescue her. And it sounds like you're on that journey of being able to at least acknowledge her. I wouldn't even acknowledge my inner child because I just didn't want to, I didn't want anything to do with her, right? When I started on my healing journey and I started getting in recovery, you know, getting really good help on my path, then I went back for her and I felt sorry for her and I comforted her and I accepted her and I cried over her. And then I became one. I no longer deal with my inner child. She's not there anymore. She's me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I still sit with mine,
know it. Sometimes I'll sit when I'm alone and I'll cry and hold her, you know, and just actually hug myself really tight and cry like a little baby. And I just like want to hold her and comfort her and make her feel safe and make her feel loved.
You're walking in tremendous healing right now, and eventually, once you have loved her, and she has received all the love and attention, and the, you know, that she never had, then all of a sudden, you'll say, she's not there. She's with, you know, she's me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because she is you, but right now, because she's not, you know, because you don't see her as, you know, how you see yourself, but once you see her as what you need, then she will become one with you, is what I'm trying to say. She will integrate, and that is so much. You'll be amazed at the.
I still have to sit with her more, you know, and just make her feel like she's safe and loved, and just help her along the way, so she doesn't try to take control of the adult situations that I get myself, you know, that I have to deal with.
Right.
Sometimes I will still go back into that frozen state when I have confrontation. Yeah, so sometimes.
Okay.
And then I have to remember, okay, I'm an adult, you know, and then I talk to my little one and tell her, okay, it's okay, you're safe, you know, as an adult. I appreciate you trying to help me, but I need to deal with it as an adult because I'm an adult.
That's awesome. And actually what you're trying to say is you're mature now, you know, because so when we're hurt and still walking out our healing, we are not mature. We keep on going back to trying to be that child and relive it, but we can never do that. So therefore, we don't grow. But once we start realizing that we are going into maturity, then we can reach back for that child. And then once we integrate, we become mature.
Makes sense. Yes.
So that's pretty neat what you're saying right now, because I lived through it already. Let's see here. And one other thing I want to ask you, when you say you were spiritually abused, a lot of people will say that, but they never really, for you personally or for me personally, we never really can put it into words. Can you put it into words or not? If you can't, I understand.
Well, for me, it was not being taught my culture, because our culture was frowned upon. It was like evil sorcery, right? So our parents would say bad things about it, because that's what they were taught when they were in the residential schools, that it was bad. It was bad medicine, right? It was bad to do those things. So we were never really, when we explored it, as we, you know, grew older and we explored and got, you know, try to say, I'll give you an example here. I tried to go see a medicine man. People call them shamans, medicine men, right? And my family would laugh about it, like, well, why are you doing that? You know, that is bad medicine, or stuff like that. And it was put down. So that was part of that spiritual abuse. Does that make sense? Or?
Well, yes, ma'am, because what I'm hearing is that was part of you that they were trying to make you think was not right, but your spirit was telling you it was right. So that meant they were trying to steal from your spirit what you knew to be true.
Yeah, and yeah, it was just looked down on me, like it was evil. So that was part of the spiritual abuse. We never got to explore that. They laughed about it. They made jokes about it.
And that
And that was hurtful, I imagine.
Yes, very. You know, so we have to do it secretly with anyone. That's where
that secret comes
in again.
Yeah. We have more panelists, so I'm going to be quiet and let Penelope take you down the pen.
Okay.
Oh, thank you,
Thank you, Pamela.
I always learn so much when Pamela comes on and shares her not only healing journey, but her expertise. I find it so interesting. So thank you for that. So I'm going to bring Jessica back on. Jessica, you're back on with Teresa. And she may be on mute.
Okay.
Let's see here, Jessica. Well, I'm going to put you back. And there's a little bit of a delay as well. Well, Jessica, I'm going to put you back on hold. And I will bring Annie from California back on. Annie, you're back on with Teresa.
Hello, thank you. Well, golly, I heard a lot of things that were inspirational and that were easily recognizable. Same things happened to me. And I wanted to say that the idea of finding people and listening to their stories was a first step. That totally is what got me being compassionate with myself. Hearing other people's stories, I felt so compassionate for them and so angry at the perpetrators that I was eventually able to do it for myself. And the idea of always living in my head, that was a big problem for me. I couldn't figure out why I never got anything done. But looking back, I can see it was because my head was always running. And that was part of the PTSD response. I too have used plants to get healthier, but in the sense of gardening. I have a garden. I spend a lot of time with plants. And I just love their life forms, and they're very healing to me. And I also wanted to say that I, too, use aromatherapy. I always have perfume on. Even though I don't go anywhere or see anyone, I still wear it. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie.
Thank you, Annie. I'll put you back on hold. And I'll bring Jessica on one more time, because I know she's still here, but sometimes if we're driving or we have on mute, it's hard to go back and forth. So, Jessica, I've had you off of mute. Just checking in. Okay, well, I'm going to put her back on mute, and she's probably not in a place where she can talk, but she still is listening in. So, Teresa, we are, believe it or not, I don't know if you're watching the time, but Pamela and I become time ladies too because we have to watch the time on the show. And so it is, we've got 25 minutes of the show left, and we're in my favorite part of it. Well, usually my favorite part of the show because we get to hear, and you gave us a little bit of a snapshot of just, you know, where you are today and the work that you're doing. And just from the write-up that you were really generous in writing up and sending to Pamela, you wrote, "I am creating healthy boundaries for me and my family. You're really, really busy now because," and you quote, "I work with social services and deliver parenting and domestic violence workshops. I teach my clients and empower them to use their voices to escape from abusive relationships. I share my life story with clients when we are working on genograms and our history as indigenous people. It is not our fault that abuse happened to us, and that took me almost 40 years to accept and believe. We have the power to be in the healthy relationships, to be in healthy relationships, and to be happy." So, wow.
Yes, so well, that's where I'm at today.
Yes, that is where you are. So I just wanted to turn it back over to you. Tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing.
Okay.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, so I work with social services, so a lot of the clients that come through our doors are leaving domestic violent relationships. They come from addiction, or they're stuck in their addictions. They have struggles with addictions. A lot of them have grown up in abusive homes. So when I sit with these clients, I teach them about their history, because a lot of them don't know their history, or I guess they don't think it's important to know their history. We'll put it that way. They don't think it's important to know their history. So I share a lot about the residential schools, you know, the intergenerational trauma that we're living with. I empower them to use their voice. I talk about the cycles of violence. We talk about, well, I could go on and on, but I talk about our history. The big part is the history part, and then everything else comes after that. We talk about the residential schools and the effects, the negative effects that had on us as a people, right? So many different effects, you know, in our people, drugs, prescription abuse, and that was all for coping, you know, gambling, promiscuous relationships, all that was part of their coping. So I teach them about that. And I don't know if you're familiar with our medicine wheel, but we all have a medicine. Okay, we all have a medicine wheel. It's just your four parts of you, right? Your emotional, mental, physical, spiritual. So we talk about how residential school affected those parts of us negatively. And then after we talk about that, we go into our history as a people. Our genograms. We'll get into our genograms, and then we look at our family histories, and we see the cycles. They're able to recognize those cycles. So then we flip that script, and we talk about, okay, let's talk about healing now. How can we change that? Right? So when I'm teaching this, me more, and I had to practice it. I had to walk my talk so my clients would look at me in a genuine way. I didn't want to go out there and just preach to them, right? I was teaching them, so I shared with them. And then I would come home, and I would practice, and I would, you know, always searching for other ways, you know, to heal in a healthier way. And I would take it back to work, and I would share it with them in our group, you know, so we were all healing together. It's a one healing journey. And I'm meeting clients all the time, right? Different clients are always coming through the doors. So I share it all the time. And I'm learning new ways. I always add to it all the time, adding new things to it. And we practice it. I get them to practice it, right? And then I'm teaching my older kids. I have a 24-year-old daughter. She has two children. So I'm teaching her, you know, about the unhealthy cycles that we've been stuck in. You know, I had a really difficult time when she became a mother. I tried to take control of everything. And I didn't let her experience being a mother on her own. I always tried to step in and take over that role. But then it took me, I guess, working with my clients, I realized I have to let my daughter, you know, be a parent and just be beside her and walk beside her and support her that way. You know, this is just part of my trauma here, trying to take control. You know, I wanted to break the cycles for my granddaughters, because I don't want them growing up in a home where there's unhealthy cycles. I want them to see that there's better ways, you know, healthier ways. And with my son now, he's 19. I have a 19-year-old son, and I want him to be in a healthy relationship, you know, with his partner. I have a young son, adopted son. He's 7 years old. So him and I are doing a lot of work together. You know, we're healing together. He triggers me a lot, but I sit with those triggers, you know, and I think, okay, what do I need to work on here? You know, this is just part of the trauma. I can't live in my trauma. I have to, you know, be my genuine self here and teach him and not just try protect him, if that makes sense. I used to protect my older kids a lot. I wouldn't let them see me have a disagreement with their dad. I protected them from everything, so I didn't really let them live and experience, because that was part of my trauma. I was living in my trauma, and so I didn't let them experience any of that. So now I'm trying to change that with my younger boy, the 7-year-old, and my granddaughters. And I'm teaching, trying to model, I'm modeling to my daughter, my older daughter. You know, there's healthier ways now. Let's break these cycles. Let's be a healthy family. We can do it, you know. That's what we have, right? We have to be healthy.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I mean, there's a great quote by Maya Angelou that says, you know, we do the best we can with what we know. And then when we know better, we do better. And so that's just, you know, I think that that's the humility that you're sharing with us, that you recognize your patterns and you've just addressed them and, you know, you've learned and you're changing. And I think that that is amazing. Nobody is a perfect parent. Nobody has perfect parents and nobody will be a perfect parent. But to me, I think the best way to try and be a good parent is just that humility piece of always being aware and trying to be aware of patterns and correct them, you know, being humble enough to address those things that need to be addressed and to be aware of them and a willingness to be aware of them and to keep growing. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And I bet you're a fantastic mother and grandmother. And how is your relationship with your daughter now?
Our relationship it's a lot better. It's like 100% better. You know, I'm letting her grow, but I'm just walking beside her and supporting her. I ask her what she needs. I never tell her what to do anymore. I'll just say, okay, what do you need? I'm here. I'll listen. Right. So I'm offering that kind of support. I know I can't do it for her. I have to let her learn. And I'll just tell her, you know, this is what I used to do. And I won't tell her do it. I just say, this is what I used to do to help me in this situation. So I've learned that. It took me a lot. It took a lot out of me to, you know, finally accept that I can control my kids. That was a big thing for me, was the power and control. And that was that negative cycle I got stuck in. Because when I was a child, like I shared before, I didn't have that control when I was being abused. I guess one of my coping was trying to be in control of everything, so I felt okay.
So may I ask, how is your relationship now with your family of origin? I don't know if your parents are still alive and your other 9 siblings. And what does that look like?
Yes.
And do are there the work that you've done?
Well, my parents are in their 80s. They're both healthy. You know, they've overcome so much in their lives. They're survivors. They're thriving now, right? They're thriving. So they're doing good. I lost one brother last year due to cancer. But everyone else, you know, all my other siblings still alive. I still have a few of them are still stuck in their addictions. They just don't want to. Or they feel like they just are so stuck and they're so, I guess it's just part of their lives now. That is the way they cope. And they don't want the help. If it's there, they won't take it. They'd rather just numb everything and not sit with their feelings. You know, but I have other siblings, too, that are doing really well. They're thriving. You know, they have big families. They're doing well. You know, they're doing well in life. So it's just 50-50.
Yeah. The siblings that are doing, you know, doing well in life, and have they also gone through the healing process in the same way that you have, or addressed it, acknowledged it
yes,
in the way that you have?
They've been to therapy. You know, a couple of them go to church. So they all have their own ways of healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to get into a program in my early 40s. It was called Focusing Oriented Therapy Program. So I was in that for 2 years, and that's where I did a lot of healing. I sat with my inner child so much, and I did a lot of my healing and grieving. I grieved so much, I never knew that I was living, you know, with grief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yes, so we were fortunate enough to meet our helpers. You know, the other ones just don't want the help, because they're just so, they're okay with living in those cycles. It's just normal for them, and they thrive on that. That is the way they want to live. And we, you know, no matter how much help we try offer, like I'll talk with one of my older sisters, and, you know, she'll cry to me, and then she'll say, I need help. What do I do, right? So I'll say, well, this is what I do. And I'll share with her. But then she goes back into her abusive relationship right away. You know, after a couple of weeks, she'll go back. You know, there's a lot of mental and emotional abuse there. But she just keeps going back because her self-worth is just so low. She doesn't believe she deserves anything better. So it's
and
different.
I know that's so... I know, it's hard. It's hard to see, you know, siblings, especially it sounds like there's, you know, you're at the 50-50 where, you know, some have gone down one path and continue to go down the healing path, and others are have not either started or going to. And we love our, you know, if you love your family like you do, it's hard to see that, but that is part of our own healing too, where you can set an example, you can inspire by example, you can offer invitations. But at the end of the day, you know, the healing journey, you have to own your own. And you have to want
yeah.
to go in that direction.
Yes, that's right. So I could just, you know, I just hear to, I listen now. I don't offer any advice. I've grown tired of that, and I know that was part of my codependency. You know, I was trying to fix and help. Now I listen and just say, well, this is what I would do. This is what I do that helps me. And I just share that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I interject, Penelope?
Oh, please.
Okay. I wanted to ask Ms. Teresa, this Pamela, I wanted to ask you, I'm on my healing journey with my daughter like you are, okay? And
mm-hmm.
she's 37 and I'm 63, and we're kind of just now able to talk about the trauma because it was pretty bad, okay, with me and her growing up. And so she just stuffed it and didn't want to deal with it. And I can't make her deal with it, right? Well, now she's started coming out of her shell and seeing that she's ready to deal with it. One of the reasons is because she's fixing to become a nurse psychiatrist. So I doubt she can do a great job if she's still got issues, right? So my question is, how do I deal with her while we're going through this? I mean, I heard you say something about dealing with, you know, your people that don't want to hear, but I'm with her now and she's starting to want to hear. So what would be your suggestion about dealing with her now that she's ready to deal?
Go ahead. I was just going to say, like I shared, now I sit with my daughter and I just tell her these are the things that helped me. It took me a long time to accept and to acknowledge that all this stuff happened to me. I don't go into details with her. I don't share awful stuff that happened. I just tell her, you know, the abuse happened, and I don't go any deeper. And I just share with her, this is what helped me on my journey. You know, and then I talk to her about healthy relationships. I teach her, you know, this is what a healthy relationship looks like. And I just share with her, like, the stuff I share with my clients. So I talk about that,
yeah,
healthy relationships, and, you know, it's okay to get counseling, therapy. It's okay. It's okay to seek help outside. So I encourage her, you know, these things here are available for you. Take advantage if you can, because they're there, you know, and you're not alone. I always tell her that you're not alone.
Okay.
There's always somebody there for you.
Okay, thank you.
I hope that helped.
Oh, it did. It really did. Sometimes you just have to be reminded of what you already know, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think,
okay,
you know, now, thank you, Pamela. And, you know, you see, Teresa, you're coming to as someone, as an expert, right? Or someone that is a great resource because you're here on the show. So you have inspired and helped,
yes,
someone this,
yes,
evening. So, but for myself as well, and it just reminds me too, it's easier when it's not someone that you're related to or that you know and have a context of history. When you can step out from an objective standpoint, it's a lot easier. But there is something about that familial, that relational bond that does, and maybe because we have the context of history or it's the triggers or it's just going back, being pushed back into patterns, it is harder. And I think that's where NASCA is such a great help, and it's such a great platform and resource, you know, of survivors, survivor professionals coming on the shows, you know. We do all support each other in this. So thank you for being a part of that this evening as well.
Thank you. And I'll say in my language, mi gwech. That just means
now, what
thank
is that?
You.
I
thank
that.
You in our language, yes.
So I did have
I
did I have
enjoyed
a
being
for
on
you.
The show. Okay.
Oh, we so enjoyed having you. So enjoyed having you. And and I can see, you know, you seem very comfortable, right, talking about your journey and talking about, you know, your children and your history and your family of origin and also just in the work you're doing now. And you seem very comfortable in it. So as you've been talking to the show, which is 90 minutes. So you're an old pro, let me tell you.
Oh,
so my question
okay,
was,
that's good
yeah.
to hear.
It's true. And, you know, you have this very calm demeanor. I don't know if you've been told that, but you just have a very calmness about you. And I bet that's very impactful for the people that you help as well in your work. And
yes.
I did have a question before we end the show, and one more question before I turn it back to you. But in terms of the work that you're doing now, and you sort of, I believe you alluded to it, did you have actual training, or is this something that, you know, you brought from, you know, knowing what you know and observing what you observed that you incorporated into the work you do now, or was there specific training that you went through?
Well, like I mentioned, when I was working in the women's shelter, I was able to enroll in a program. It was called Focusing Oriented Therapy, Complex Trauma. So
mm-hmm.
I was in the program for 2 years. And it was really intense work working with our wounded inner child, a lot of it, right? So going deep within and dealing with all our issues, childhood trauma issues, and working with other people who have experienced the same or similar stuff. So I had 2 years of training there, and then I went to different workshops where I would learn about trauma healing. So just a lot of self-taught stuff too, you know, going on the internet searching and reading and, you know, getting into the Louise Hay, doing a lot of positive affirmation work, you know, the self-worth, self-healing. So just going out there and finding my own stuff to help me support my clients in a better way. So a lot of researching and reading and talking to people and, you know, connecting, trying to make those connections. So a lot of workshops, going to workshops. I had the two-year training. I was also in university, and when I was in university, I took 4 years for the Bachelor of Education program, so learning a lot about child development, you know, what is normal, all that. So all that stuff just came together. And in my own healing journey, you know, I picked a lot up from my sessions with my therapists, my helpers, and I shared that, or I shared with my clients, you know, this is, maybe this will help you. This is what I was taught, or this is what I learned when I was in this session. Or so everything I do is related to healing my life. That's my journey.
Well,
to help.
Yes.
Can I ask one question, short question?
Absolutely.
Has COVID hindered anything that you're doing now, or is it going the same way? You're helping.
Now that COVID hit last year, we couldn't have any of our programs. So tomorrow is my first day back into programming, and I'm doing it virtually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we were off for like a year. So
wow.
We just have that, we couldn't have contact with anybody. It would just be through iPads using the Zoom Messenger just to, you know, check in. How are things doing?
Yeah.
How are things going? You know, so that was the only we had with our clients.
Are y'all having a rise in domestic violence and child abuse because of COVID?
Yes. Yeah, you're getting more calls. And then there's also times where there's quiet times where everyone is just home, and it's like there's cycles here, right? You see the cycles, different times of the month. You know, domestic violence, more calls are coming in, or more calls about kids being left home alone. So there's a cycle, and you know the patterns. We know the patterns.
Yeah.
We know what
right.
to expect, right?
Okay.
Yeah, but, yeah, there's been a rise in domestic violence.
All right. Well, the show's about getting ready to end, isn't it, Penelope?
It is. So with that, I just wish to, you know, thank you, really to thank our very special guest, Teresa Fontaine, this evening for coming on. And this is the first time that she has shared her story.
Thank you.
On the radio live with the entire world, and just absolutely wish to thank her for her courage, and she really came and just was just so forthright and humble about her experience. Not only that, but how she's helping others today, sharing her life stories with people, for some of her indigenous people as well, to help them heal and move forward in their healing process. So we wish to thank Teresa for coming on the show tonight. I wish to thank my co-host, Pamela Lockhart, and our panel, Annie and Jessica. Please remember that April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, but in terms of NASCA, every day is an opportunity. If you see something, please say something. Thank you and good night.
Blog Talk Radio.